McDonald, it's good to be with you.
Secretary Clinton said okay, good. I want you to be very happy.
The central question in this election is really what kind of country we want to be and what kind of future we'll build together.
Our jobs are fleeing the country. They're going to Mexico. They're going to many other countries.
I call it trumped up, trickle down.
I think I did a great job in getting him to produce his birth certificate.
Secretary Clinton.
Join the debate by saying more crazy things.
It's all words. It's all sound bites.
I'm not going to make any excuses.
African Americans, Hispanics are living in hell.
It can't be dismissed that easily.
Somebody who's been very vicious to me, Rosie O'Donnell.
And I think we should talk about that.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. You know, part of the mission and vision of this program is that each day we choose the story or issue we believe most Americans will have a conversation about over the course of each day. And today that choice is kind of a no-brainer. It was the debate last night where we learned that Donald Trump's 10-year-old son is really good with computers. Perhaps he's on a watch list for cybersecurity. I don't know, but that's one of the details we learned last night. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in the first presidential debate at Hofstra University on Long Island. The candidate spent 100 minutes channeling the great divide in the American electorate this year. It was a study in contrast that I think has no precedent in modern American political history. The debate, moderated by Lester Holt of NBC News, officially asked the candidates about achieving prosperity, securing America, and America's direction. Those were the headings for each third of an hour in this debate, but it went wide of those particular issues. This first side-by-side showcase from Trump and Clinton was about a whole lot more. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, your impressions?
Well, I think the amazing thing about this debate is the first time you see these two candidates in contrast, right? You've seen Donald Trump in more than a dozen, I don't know, maybe 18 debates over the course of his primary. I don't know if it was 18. And you've seen Hillary Clinton debate Bernie Sanders so many times in this cycle and so many times in the past when you were watching all the various campaigns that she's been in. But nothing distills the choice, right, capital C, than getting the two people on the stage together, because the contrast, not only on television and in style, but in the split screen and in the way the two candidates present themselves is so very important. And John, your impression that this is unprecedented in so many ways comes into stark relief, because for many voters, I think it's difficult to distill the contrast between the two vastly different styles and vastly different things going on in this campaign until you see them side to side. One candidate, Hillary Clinton, who is flawed, been around for a long time, normal politician, elected to this, elected to that. You know her, you like her, you don't like her. Very over the plate in terms of American politics. And another candidate who's so far not only outside the lines, but whose campaign has been aberrant in so many ways when it comes to American political and cultural norms, that when those two things get together, there's just no getting around that this is not a normal campaign.
I mean, one of the difficulties about talking about this debate is the contrast in language. I mean, we're used to candidates playing fast and loose with the facts, exaggerating, making promises that they can't keep. But in this particular case, you had one candidate speaking like a regular politician, but incomplete sentences and with a cadence that's very familiar in American politics. And you had another candidate. I mean, in journalism, you have to be careful when you speak. You can't say things like thousands and thousands of companies are leaving America. Thousands and thousands. I mean, it's thousands and thousands. And that kind of refrain over and over from Donald Trump, I think, was a real contrast. You can't really fact check that. I mean, he talked about Carrier air conditioning moving from Indiana to Mexico, but then he kept saying thousands and thousands more. You can't really fact check that. It's a form of political speech that we haven't really heard before.
That's true. And it's a form of political speech that has benefited Donald Trump greatly.
Yeah, that's true.
People like you, John, and like me, a lot of journalists who are like, well, you fact check this stuff and nobody cares. There's this frustrated cliche refrain in political journalism now, which is called nothing matters. Nothing matters anymore. It doesn't matter how crazy the claim is. The fact checks don't stick. Now, here's, I think, the main—
Just to quote Trump, it's a beautiful thing, Todd Zwillick. It's a beautiful thing.
And here's the main point behind how that affects things. That has worked for Donald Trump, but he has this ceiling, right? 42%. This is an audience you saw last night, Super Bowl-sized audiences. And of course, this race is about the undecideds and moderate Republicans, independents in places like Pennsylvania and Colorado, that Donald Trump's only path to victory. who are uncomfortable with Donald Trump. The gang at the rallies and the gang who are on the Trump train are pro-Trump. Nothing he says is going to get them off of it. And Hillary's hardcore supporters, same goes, despite all of the fact-checking frustrations that all of us have with this rhetorical nonsense that we hear so often. But again, in the primetime contrast of these two candidates, that becomes more and more difficult. And so in this case, you saw it last night. Now, how much does this affect the rest of the race in the debates? That's an open question. I think the answer might be negligible. The history of how much debate performances actually tip elections shows that they don't count for much.
A great moment that illustrates exactly what you're saying is this exchange, which actually goes back to 1964 and the way in which LBJ demolished Barry Goldwater. This is the way they're talking about the nuclear trigger. In a sense, it lands like a sort of comedy moment. It's not a real issue, even though the stakes couldn't be higher. Listen to this.
So a man who can be provoked by a tweet should not have his fingers anywhere near the nuclear codes, as far as I think anyone with any sense about this should be concerned.
That line's getting a little bit old, I must say. Listen,
it's a good one, though.
I would like to.
Well, describes the problem.
It's not an accurate one at all. It's not an accurate one. So I just want to give a lot of things and just to respond. I agree with her on one thing. The single greatest problem the world has is nuclear armament, nuclear weapon.
Right. Nothing could be more grave in a presidential debate. Yeah. There was also a question on nuclear first use, which is right. Not just a question of whether you decide to nuke the Russians first. There's an entire military doctrine underlying that Donald Trump didn't quite seem to be aware of. And let me follow that on one other Donald Trump statement on very serious national security issues that I think a lot of people took notice of.
I have a son. He's 10 years old. He has computers. He is so good with these computers. It's unbelievable. The security aspect of cyber is very, very tough. And maybe it's hardly doable. But I will say we are not doing the job we should be doing. But that's true throughout our whole governmental society.
So it sounds like a cut you pulled out of context, but it's not.
No, this is for anything else, whether you think this is a good answer or not, this is the mark of a candidate who was unprepared to answer this question. He may not care to be prepared for it, but on the issues of cybersecurity and what needs to be done to counter Russian and Chinese hacking, I mean, this is a nonsensical answer.
To be fair, I think that there was a substantive exchange on trade, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
His best moments on were on trade. Absolutely.
Exactly.
He should repeat those.
And Hillary Clinton did not really have an answer about how she's flip-flopped on TPP, and Trump was able to claim it was because of him. I also thought the way both candidates confronted or failed to really confront Lester Holt's very good questions about race and law enforcement was very telling, and we'll see where that goes in the next debate.
Yeah, I think it was too. I think the fact that Donald Trump in this debate failed to speak in a sensitive or meaningful way about race to me wasn't surprising, frankly. His strategy throughout this campaign at the times he does talk about race has been largely talking over the heads of people of color, particularly in this case, black folks and Latino voters, Hispanic voters, to normalize his campaign with white voters who are uncomfortable with the Donald Trump phenomenon, you know, white nationalists and stuff like that. People I think of is in the Pennsylvania suburbs. So that to me wasn't surprising.
And here he is deflecting.
But just like she can't bring back jobs, she can't produce.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to follow up, and I will let you respond to that, because if there's a lot there, but we're talking about racial healing in this segment. What do you say to Americans?
Well, it was very, I say nothing. I say nothing because I was able to get him to produce it. He should have produced it a long time before.
He's talking about the birther issue there. So, but again,
I say nothing.
I say nothing to them. No backtracking, no contrition on the birther issue, the racist lie that he spread across this country for 6 years.
Normally, the headline in all the papers would be, I paid no taxes, right? We learned that last night.
Yeah. Well, sort of acknowledging that he might not have, or that if he had, it might have gone to use. I do want to say one thing about Hillary's answers on race. They were much more complete.
True.
She talked about policing. She talked about criminal justice reform. She talked about unfair treatment for African-American males. But Hillary's answers on race, I was a little surprised on. They were extremely cautious, given how strong her support is in this community and how much she needs massive African American turnout in places like Philadelphia and other cities in order to swamp Trump. It was a passionless set of answers. It was extremely cautious, and it was an opportunity, I thought, for Hillary Clinton to express a real connection with the wants and needs and anxieties of African American and Latino voters, in this case African Americans, that she might have missed.
And the Trump omissions here, nothing about the Clinton Foundation, nothing really about extent to which the emails could have been a national security crisis.
He hit her on it.
Asked about, but it was not. It was not really elaborated on, and that's what people are going to be talking about all day today. Takeaway: Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick, you'll be back for the next debate, right?
We will be back for the next debate and for the three that are remaining.
Thanks so much.
You got it.
There's a lot going on right now: mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.